Hey, welcome in, everybody. Glad you're along with us. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold every Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com. Fat Tony Lauren Brooks here with you. What's up, Ozone? How are you?
Those highlights were not from yesterday.
They were not from yesterday.
No, they were not.
As a matter of fact, time to start building.
Chick
and it is a Wild body West of work. Guns and Gold Monday.
It is. Did you bring your gold?
I brought my guns.
If you need to, you can trade.
You know, I brought my guns.
I was listening to that open, and it struck me, when's the last time we saw Blake evade a rush?
Yeah.
I mean, and early when he was in the games, it really did feel like every week he was making two or three plays where he had no right to make that play. I don't know where that's gone for him in this offense, but for the last month or so, there's been none of that from him.
There's been a lot of things going in the wrong direction. I mean, you know, Blake right now is in a funk, and we'll begin. Let me just throw the question of the day out there because it's we're going to get a lot of response to this. We got a lot of response yesterday unprompted to this one, believe it or not. Just what's the biggest culprit in terms of the offense right now? And it, obviously, it could be coaching, it could be the personnel, you know, it could be the front office, but have they put together the right plan? It could be the, you know, these players aren't developing quickly enough. You hang that on the offensive coordinator, you hang that on Gus Bradley, you hang that on the players themselves for not executing. There's probably, usually with questions like this, there's a little bit of everything involved in it.
And I think the biggest factor is time. And what I mean by that is when Blake first came into the game, there was no tape on him. Now, after a few weeks, months, defensive coordinators have seen what this team's doing. They've seen what they did well or did well a little bit, which for a while was run. Now they're taking that away. And right now, it appears that the offense has not adjusted to defenses taking away what they want to do and what they do well. They haven't made that second adjustment. I don't know that the unit is experienced enough right now to get better at that before the end of the season. But that's what you want to see from the last 5 weeks is some sort of, okay, we know what they're going to stop. Now we've got to figure out how to get some yards even when they're stopping that.
Right. There's got to be a plan B, right? You go into that game. I think we would have thought Jed Fish was nuts if he didn't try to go run heavy in this football game based on what you saw last week, certainly with Indianapolis struggling to stop the run based on Denard Robinson, the month that he had leading up to that game, you would have been nuts to do anything else. But when that doesn't work, clearly, and they're putting eight men in the box, and they're daring you to throw the football.
Well, and then I think the counter to that was, let's throw screens, let's throw out wide, because, you know, I was getting tweets all the first half, why aren't they throwing downfield? What is Jed Fish doing? At the same time, every time I saw them drop back, he was throwing with a guy right in his face.
Or getting drilled.
I don't know how much more. As a coordinator, I don't know how you call a play to go further downfield when you're looking out there and the quarterback's getting hit as soon as he throws. So that's the dilemma. And I'm the first one to say, in this league, you've got to be able to spread the field. You've got to be able to loosen up the defense to run. You cannot run into eight-man fronts. But that, I think, was what they were wrestling with. Was the reason they didn't do that.
But, John, doesn't that bring up a pretty concerning issue? You can't block a basic, it seems, 5 or 7 step drop at all. You're not giving these plays time to develop. You've gone out. Now, I understand you got a couple of rookies on there, but those are the guys you brought in. And the rookie center that you're starting, you never expected him to play. The guy that you thought, the two guys you had ahead of him, you either misevaluated how good you thought they were going to be or maybe how quickly Belanco would come along. But I think he's playing well overall, but I think he's playing out of default almost, right? It was never the plan. So I'm not going to make an excuse that they have two rookies on the offensive line. Pastor's not a rookie. I'm sorry, Jokel may be a rookie in terms of the amount of games he's played.
You got to play better.
You got to play better, right? I mean, when you're not running the ball and you can't protect on any kind of play developing 20 yards down the field, the offensive line is a major issue with this football team.
And they've got to figure out, and I don't think they know what the answer to this question is yet, but they have to figure out now, you know, in the off season, ideally you'd like to think that that's addressed because you're young there and you like the guys individually. But if it's like this, then you have to wonder, what do you do? Zane Beadle's, my understanding, didn't play that well yesterday. Luke Jokel struggled. There's still too much struggling on. Somebody's struggling. So you've got to figure out, do we have to address these positions in the off season?
is and these are positions you thought you had addressed, right?
I think you, again, I've been saying all along, all these rookies playing, it's not realistic to think every one of these rookies that you throw in there is going to be part of the core. You're going to have to, okay, these four guys work, this one guy doesn't, we still have to address. You're not going to throw everything out there and bat 100% when you're throwing this many rookies out there. But they have to figure out which ones aren't. And, you know, I don't know that they know the answer to that yet. But it's got to be a question.
And it's not just rookies. I mean, and I don't know if it's, again, game plan. I don't know what it is. Mercedes Lewis and Cecil Shorts, basically an afterthought yesterday. They're not rookies.
Right.
You know, and Mercedes, I realize he hasn't played in a while, but he's been practicing for a few weeks. I would have thought he would show some kind of impact, whether here he comes in the running game to improve what's already been pretty good for the last 4 weeks or, you know, as a target over the middle, a big guy to replace Allen Robinson.
Now, again, the run, you know, we always talk in trends. The run against Dallas was not good. There was one play. They had a 32-yarder, and other than that, Denard went for, I think it was 15 for 60 with one of them for 32. So in the last couple of weeks, you've seen signs that, hey, we know they're not going to beat us in the passing game. Let's stop the run and see if they can beat us in the passing game.
Certainly.
So that... It certainly played out that way against the Colts.
But still, even with that, 15 for 60 compared to what they got yesterday, which is about 2 yards a carry yesterday.
Right, I mean, especially with Denard. So they're taking that away.
So,
and now you've got to be able to adjust out of that, and they didn't.
But you got a exactly. You got a team that hasn't been able to stop that, taking that away from you, because you can take
something away
if you gang up.
The previous week when they didn't take it away, they had Tom Brady.
I get that.
So you're going to have that matchup. And everybody who said last week this team should be able to run, that was going to be a problem because you didn't have Tom Brady.
But the Patriots aren't running for 200 yards every week
either,
right? I mean, they saw something in that matchup that they felt they could exploit, and they were able to. Let me give you some sobering numbers here, okay? Because I know a lot of people want to look at Peyton Manning's rookie year and draw inspiration, right? Threw a bunch of interceptions. It's okay. You can do that. And you can, okay? It stunned me how parallel these numbers are. 8 starts, okay? Third game in to your starting career as a rookie, you have a 330-plus yard passing day. It's the only one you have, but it's out of your first 8. You throw for about 5 more 200-yard games, a couple of games under 200 yards. You throw 8 touchdowns. You throw 15 picks or 13 picks. Whose stats are those?
I would think they're Blake's.
One's Blake's. The other's Geno Smith from last year.
Okay.
Okay, I mean...
Yeah.
So that's a guy who you watch from afar. You said, this guy is in trouble, right? He's a turnover machine. Geno's the one with the 13 picks. Blake's the one with the 15 picks. Every other stat is almost identical through 8 starts for those guys. That doesn't mean Blake can't turn. I mean, circumstances are different. I'm just saying, you know, I'm surprised based on the first few games where he came in and he played so loose and free, and I get it. Sometimes you come in and you just kind of wing it, so to speak. And he had all that success early that we haven't seen him seemingly build on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was not as wowed early as everybody else was. It was fine, but he still had the 2 picks in each of those games. I think it was 2 in each of the first 3 games. I mean, again, I just sort of see it. The concern is not necessarily as much numbers, but we talked about at the beginning of the show, no real loose and free and big plays in the last couple of weeks, and that's what you'd like to see him get back to. It's hard to get inside a guy's head and say he's losing confidence, he's getting, but it certainly looks like he's not playing the same way as he did the first 3 or 4 weeks. And that's understandable because things aren't going well.
Is Jed Fish losing confidence in him, do you think? Or do you think? I
got the impression yesterday, and I was asked this a lot in the other zone. I got the impression yesterday that it wasn't as much losing confidence specifically in Blake, but it certainly appeared that there was a lack of confidence that a play called downfield would work, whether it was a combination of guys not being open downfield, whether it was a combination of offensive line. That's what struck it. I don't think they worry that Blake can't make those plays, but it's like we talked about, when he's getting hit, a 5-step drop, I think there is a confidence on an individual series basis of, okay, will this play work now? And you're thinking, well, no, it's not going to work because this guy just got hit with a 4-step, or with a three-step drop, how in the world is he going to get a seven-step drop off? I think the confidence there is that you haven't seen it execute, so you worry about it. I don't think there's a worry that he couldn't do it if the circumstances were right.
Right. It's just right now, it's not clicking. And you look at the end of the first half, and we had a call yesterday on the post game saying, why didn't they go for it? Well, they had 12 seconds left. You have an offense that's really not done anything,
from
right?
35, I had the same kind of thoughts. Like, boy, why don't you just take a 20-yard shot here? But at the same token, when they've done that, it's backfired. So you sort of feel, again, like everything's sort of closing in on it.
You've turned it over twice.
Yeah.
And you're in it's a three-point game. You're going to get the ball first in the second half. I just felt like at that point, I felt like the odds of throwing a pick there were almost better than the odds of you actually getting in field goal range. And then once you're there, executing the field goal from any kind of distance. I mean, it's one thing for a 28-yarder when you get your hand on it. It might still go through.
The fan in you thought what we both thought of, hey, let's go for it here. But the realist in you said, okay, you're down 3 points. Again, they were in the game.
Defense played so well.
Yeah.
Don't give them any reason. And the odds of you, again, I think the odds at best were extremely low that they could get in field goal range and then execute the field goal, which is another whole issue entirely. All right. Phone lines are open to you for the next 2 hours. Got a ton of your tweets in yesterday. We'll respond to some of those as well. The fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is simply focused on the offense. And we can talk defense as well, special teams, whatever you want to get into. The roster, the coaching, the front office, it's all fair game. But what is the biggest reason for the offense not clicking right now? Is it coaching? Is it the players not executing? Is it the youth overall? Is it the front office not putting together the right personnel? Whatever you think it is, share it with us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. You know that because Osier's here. All right. It's Jaguars today, 641-1010. Phone lines open to you when we return in a moment here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I'd love to tell you what this is, but I can't get my instant messenger going. Osier's got this on his... Did Lauren get this from you? Did you email her this
kind of a kicky little number, isn't
it? Yeah, I have no idea what this is. Lauren, tell us what this is, please.
This is Sean Paul, We Be Burning.
Yes, we be.
Burn the tape?
Basically, yeah. I don't ever want to watch that game again.
Yeah, all right.
I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, I don't know how you're doing that.
Lucky you, Tony. Lucky
Hooray!
You.
Oh, there goes T.Y. Hilton.
Stop it.
Where are you, Sip?
Stop it. He's biting on something else.
I'm sure Jeff Lagerman was real happy that he picked Blake Bortles as his quarterback yesterday.
Hey,
you were happy.
didn't do much, honestly,
when
it was all said and done.
He had the one big play.
Yeah.
Essentially, that was his game. He had
one
big play.
And he missed. I mean, how many times will he miss that throw to Reggie Wayne?
Yeah, not many. Not many.
3 out of 100, maybe?
Right. They were
most professional quarterbacks will not miss that throw. I mean, that was another one that kept the game a little bit tighter than it otherwise could have been. But I'm not overall defense was not the issue with this.
No, I mean, and especially the way they played. Too often this season, you've had a situation where the defense gives up a touchdown in the third quarter to make it. Yeah, yesterday it was 13-3 when the Colts scored their first touchdown. There's been a couple other cases like that where the other team scored to go up 17-7, 17-3. When you give up a touchdown in the third quarter and the other team has 13 points, it shouldn't feel like the game's over.
Oh, it was over.
And it feels that way too much.
It felt that way. It's interesting
you say
that.
And that's unfair for the defense to be in that situation because the defense – in 4 or 5 different games, has played winning football, has done what we all talked about the defense needed to do. And people get tired of me talking about it. You hope that the defense this year would play well enough to keep this team in the game 12 times. That it would be that kind of a defense. So far, it's been that kind of a defense. There's been some games where it hasn't. I mean, there's been exceptions. But overall, the course of 11 games, defense has played, I don't even know if that was its best half. It played a great half.
It was a pretty
Miami.
Good half.
It was a really good half, but was it better than Miami? I mean, this defense has done that, is my point. I mean,
this may be game six of that, John. Honestly, this may be game six where the defense has played in the NFL at a level that is good enough to win games, and the offense has been good enough to win one.
Right. Yes.
I'll say, considering the opponent, It was as good as any, with the possible exception of the first half against Philadelphia.
Right. Miami is a good team, and
regardless,
they shut them down.
There's a handful of, yes, it's one of the best halves of football they've played all year.
Right. It's hot right now.
But they haven't, but again, it's not like that was, at halftime, I wasn't shocked that they had played that well. They've played that well before, and you know,
I was shocked they were able to get to Luck as many times as they were. Now they took advantage of Gazdur Sherrilis being out, and that's what you do.
That's what you do.
You beat the backup silly, and that's exactly what they did. And that's fantastic. I have no knock on that. And not only got there, but knocked the ball free. Got
did everything
on the ball,
you wanted.
Create, I mean, gave the Jags a ball in point blank range. Gave the offense a ball in point blank range. Couldn't do anything.
At halftime of that game, the defense walked into the locker room and had to think to itself, we have done everything that we talked about in meetings Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Everything
short of
we
scoring touchdowns.
Right. Which,
on defense.
But they got turnovers.
Of course.
They gave them the ball at 46. They gave them the ball at the 12. They got, you know, they got them out. They got a break when they got the turnover in their own reds. I mean, they did what they had to do. So, you know, and we talked for the first 15 minutes of the show that the offense didn't.
Absolutely. And I have a feeling we're going to have more talk about that coming up right now.
Might be a topic.
Let's go to the phone. 641-1010. Whatever's on your mind from the standpoint of, you know, your frustration level, where you're pointing the finger. You can talk about bright spots if you want to do that. You can talk about anything you like. Jaguar related. Keep it clean. Don is going to lead us off today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Don. I'm sorry. Joey is up first on Jaguars Today. Hi, Joey.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. What's up?
To me, just two things really quick, and I'll hang up and listen to what you guys think about it. But to me, first of all, Blake's confidence is gone. It has left the building. But that guy, he's not even carrying himself like he used to. Early when he first got in this year, he used to step up in the pocket. It felt like his eyes were downfield a lot. It's so gone now that he's not even attempting to make the downfield throws. And quarterbacks, when they're making those downfield throws, they're making the defense be honest. Then all that misdirection stuff we'd like to run, whatever, all the short stuff, it works. Right now, that stuff has no chance because the defense is just piling up. And it's like it's his not going downfield and losing his confidence and not being accurate down the field is like making it worse for him now because he can't get easy stuff to get him going. So now it just seems like it's piling up right now. I hope he can have a big game here soon because if he doesn't, I feel like he's just spiraling right now.
All right, Joey, thank you. I can't speak to what's going on inside his head.
Yeah.
It's difficult to know without knowing what's called. Is Blake not going with what's called? Is he not taking shots? Is he checking down too quickly because he doesn't trust the protection, for instance? Or is Jed Fish saying, you know what? We called a couple of those plays, couldn't really protect it, whatever the case, didn't work. We're going to go away from those. I don't know how many are being called. It does seem like there are plays with deeper drops that he's setting up to survey the field and maybe take some shots down the field, and you never really see those have time to develop.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to his confidence. He doesn't look like I wouldn't look at him and say right now he looks like an ultra-confident guy, but I'm not going to psychoanalyze him right now either.
Yeah, and you get into such trouble when you try to say, here's how a guy's feeling, here's what a guy's thinking, because you don't know. You know, he's not throwing the ball downfield with as much confidence, I don't think, as he did in the first couple of games. But at the same time, I'm sitting here as Tony watches the replay of the game. Every time I look over, it feels like whenever Blake is setting up, there is a blue shirt right in his face to be in his face. So I don't know how confident and how much you're going to step up into that. I mean, so it's both sides. I don't think he's as confident, but I don't know that he has a reason to be.
How do you evaluate in that circumstance? It's got to be incredibly difficult for the coaching staff to sit there and evaluate what's going on. If your quarterback has no time, if he's constantly harassed, if he's got a bunch of rookies around him, he's a rookie himself.
The phrase that was used to me by a scout a couple weeks ago, an awful lot of moving parts around the kid. And that's what, you know... It's not an excuse, it's not whatever, but that's the reality. And that's when there's a lot of moving parts, it's hard, it's very hard to identify one as a problem, one as a weakness. It's just a lot going on, so it's hard to know.
What you're seeing though with the fan base is they're question. They're looking at, well, when is it going to get better?
Sure.
Right? And we're not talking about the short term over the next 5 weeks. They're saying, and I think legitimately so, let's look at next year. Well, all these moving parts, are we going to assume they're all going to get better? I mean, you look at Cyprian, some people thought, this guy's going to launch a long string of Pro Bowls this year, right? Well, just because you're going into your second year doesn't mean you're going to make a quantum leap in improvement on the football field. So there's still going to be a lot of moving parts. And, you know, I know there's a lot of talk right now. Jed Fish is in the public's hot seat. I don't know if he's in the building's hot seat, but let's say this team went 1-15. John, I mean, do you make a change with the offense coordinator? Because if you do, now you're taking your rookie quarterback and you're asking him to hit the reset button with a brand new offense next year.
Yeah, asking to change systems.
And all these other young players around him to change systems. Yep. And how many times have we seen that in the NFL where young, maybe talented quarterbacks can never settle in? You look at Jason Campbell. What do you have, like 4 different coordinators first four years in Washington?
Sixth year, you're writing the story. He's on his 5th coordinator. Yeah, that's the ultimate conflict, the ultimate dilemma.
641-1010. Let's get Jack in here next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jack.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right, I'm calling. Let me preface this by saying that I'm a football coach. I've coached football for over 35 years here in Duval County on various levels, basically high school, a little semi-pro.
Okay, Jack, we got the resume. What's your point?
Okay, my point is this. We're talking about Blake Bortles and all that, but I look back, and I hate to do this, but I look at the coaches. They go in at halftime, and everybody's high, but they don't seem to make adjustments to come out in the second half like other teams do. If you're beating somebody, they're going to go in and make adjustments. But it seems as though we, go on the same pattern. You know, it worked good the first half. Let's not worry about making any changes. And I don't know whether it's the head coach or the offensive coordinator or whatever, but there seems to be something lacking in the way that they're coaching up the offensive line. They don't seem to block. I watch other teams and guys on blocks. I watch our team and our guys are standing around picking up the quarterback, picking up the running back, but they're not picking up any blocks.
All right, Jack, let me jump in here and,
I'm not making light of this, but that was a great line. There's something wrong with the offensive line. They don't seem to block.
That's an issue.
He's not wrong.
I mean, I'm sitting here watching the game tape again. You know when the Colts brought 4 yesterday when it was 3rd and 20? Before that, it was 5, 6, 7 guys at times that they were sending at this offensive line, and they were incapable of picking up what was going on. They were putting
it on Blake, too. Because it was working.
Right. It kept working. We saw the back-to-back plays with Landry coming on that blitz and that same hole. They had 2 guys free in that gap, 2 plays in a row, and Denard is in no man's land on those plays. I mean, what's he supposed to do with two guys?
Right. I know, because it looked on the second one, it looked bad. It looked at first like he dove out of the way of Landry, but he's driving at somebody else's feet trying to get a piece of them. And, that's one that, not being the football coach with the 30 years of experience, I would still
35.
I would still surmise that that's on the quarterback. You've got to recognize who the unblocked guy is. That's what I've been told by Loggeman, by Garrard. It's when you're pointing at the mic, you're figuring out who the unblocked guy potentially is. That's the QB's responsibility, and then you got to have a hot read coming off of that. There's got to be something. I got to believe that every play has a built-in hot read in case of a blitz type situation. I mean, that's just the way it works. And why they couldn't go to that? That second one seems more of a quarterback issue to me. Is my guess. I don't know that for a fact, but that's my guess just watching the game. And as far as Jack talks about halftime adjustments, nothing worked in the first half. So it's not like they said, hey, this is working, let's stick with it. But they came out and went 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out.
Minus 12 for the quarter.
Minus 12 for the third quarter, John. So in terms of total yardage. So clearly, I don't even know if Indy made that big of an adjustment. It's not like the Jags offense was any good in the first half, but they were worse in the third quarter. The Jags certainly did nothing to counter what they were being shown on defense.
Yeah, I was sitting here getting ready to say something about, the blitz, a lot of time that pickup, that's exactly what having so many 7, 8 rookies, whatever it is, playing youth, that's what you get. But we're in week 11. I don't want to say it anymore.
I agree. And that's the thing, right? At what point do you say you've played enough to recognize that some of these situations you need to start improving at.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not trying to avoid the question. I just, you know, I don't want to sit there and talk about five or six rookies and that being a reason anymore.
I agree with you.
And people don't want to hear it anymore.
I agree with you. Let's go to Chris next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Chris.
How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I have been in Jacksonville since 2000, and I have given up. I have tried and tried and tried to be a Jaguar fan, but they are just painful to watch. I mean, every off season, they're blowing sunshine up your whatever, and the product on the field does not improve. I just don't see, you know, why anybody could be a Jaguar fan right now. It's a business.
Okay. I think he's done with it. I don't know if his phone was breaking up, but we didn't cut you off. We were trying to give you a chance to make your point. I'm not going to try to convince Chris that it's his obligation to be a Jaguar fan, but
and same. Nobody on any organization would either. They get that it's not. I mean, nobody's going to tell you that 1-10 is acceptable.
You've been given what you deserve.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's a perfectly legitimate feeling for the fans to have. I get emails all the time. The fans deserve better than this. Yep. Yeah, they do.
They do, absolutely. But, you know, what is the solution to that? Is the solution to wash your hands of the franchise? That's your prerogative. Sure. I'm not saying it's the solution for everybody. When Chris says, I can't see how anybody would be a fan, well, look around. If you really look at the landscape of sports,
right?
There are franchises that have struggled for half a century. Okay, I'm not saying you have to blindly support any team that's that bad for however long. That's
everybody understands that the obligation is to win games in the National Football League, and everybody understands that 1-10 isn't the end. You know, and the thing you have to wonder is, are they moving in the right direction? And that's, again, that's what they got to figure out in the last five games of the season.
All right, let's take a timeout here. If you're on the line, stay right there. If you want to get on the line, the way to do it is 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Jaguars Today. Short work week. Osier, I'm exhausted. Right?
What's that?
I'm exhausted.
You work hard.
We worked for like
you don't get enough credit.
I always say
you don't get enough credit when they win or enough blame when they lose.
Me personally,
yeah.
I should get more. I get plenty of blame for all kinds of things. I should get all the credit when they are successful. Jags or anyone else, for that matter.
Well, Tony gives you credit, but he has to.
He does. It's in his contract.
Yeah, it's part of it.
It's in his contract. Just check the crayon on the napkin, and you'll see that. What are you eating over there, by the way?
Almonds?
Those good?
Yeah, they're very good.
Are they tasty? All right. Very nice. I'm an almond fan. Although, you know, you're supposed to eat, like, a small little handful of them, and I tend to eat, like, a jar of them. So that kind of defeats the purpose, you know.
Right.
Oh, that's healthy food. Yeah, and I just ate a ton of it. So that should be good for me. All right, 641-1010. Talking Jags with you. Let's get back to the phone lines. A lot of you want to weigh in today, so let's do it. Steve, you're up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. I just want to talk about what I noticed last game. Basically, I was able to call every call that the Jaguars were going to make on offense. Hand the ball to Denard, first play. Every single time. And when you know what they're going to run every single play, it makes it easy. Blake Bortles, it seems like he needs to run the ball more. I think maybe he's not, if the player's not open, he needs to take off running. He needs to get out of the pocket, take off running. I mean, open it up a little bit. So those are things that I'm noticing that we need to change and fix up. If we don't do that, I mean, the season's already over, but if we don't do that, we'll never get any gains.
All right, thank you, Steve. You know, we talked about that. We're not seeing Blake make those escape plays as much. At first I thought he was talking about like those read option plays, which he's done a terrific job with at times this year. And, you know, picked up a 20-yard gain and faked out the half the stadium doing it, which is a nice compliment and use of his ability. But
yeah, I don't really want to see a quarterback who takes off running at the first sign of duress in terms of running downfield. I think you would like to see him get back to being able to get outside the pocket a little more, but Tony just pointed something out that basically when the Colts didn't blitz, the passing game was working okay.
Yeah, he was fine.
And when they were blitzing, it was getting to him so quick, I'm not sure he could get out of the pocket.
Right.
So I think that, you know, instinctively, yeah, you want to see him get back to what we saw early against the Colts, against the Chargers, where he was getting outside the pocket. Again, when a defense blitzes like that, it sort of takes away that option, and you have to be able to beat it in the passing game or pick it up. When it's not getting picked up, not a lot for the quarterback to do individually, perhaps.
You know, it seemed like sometimes against those blitzes, you throw those screens, and there are huge plays waiting to happen,
yeah.
Right? Seemed like the plays they did pick up good yardage, Denard Robinson still was having to make some spectacular open field moves to make guys miss. You know, the rest of the time you saw the tight end screen was an abomination. You know, Todman, nothing there. I mean, just even those plays, which seem to be great blitz killers, didn't really click yesterday for the Jags.
No.
No, I didn't.
That's what I got for you, Mike.
No, it's not really a question. I'm just, you know, it's just an option.
It's a Wild West Golden Gun Monday, Mike.
There you go. Steve talking about being predictable on play calling. I think we all would have predicted they're going to go in there and be run heavy yesterday.
Yep.
And had they not,
we'd have been ripped.
We would have been killing them for that because, are you kidding me? This team just gave up all these rushing yards to a no-name guy.
Yes,
you would
have
liked
to have seen them adjust better off that.
I would agree.
Again, we talked about earlier, it's going to be a broken record. When you try to adjust off that and you can't get guys blocked, then where do you go next? I don't know.
I don't either. Yeah. That's the stage you're at right now.
We're supposed to know that.
If you want to watch, here's where you're going to go. You're going to see a steady dose of blitzes. All right?
Right.
Because if you watch that film and if you say, all right, well, they're doing pretty good when we don't blitz them and they're terrible when we do, let's just send the house every single time. I mean, really, I felt yesterday, I know Tony and Jeff and Frank were discussing this on the broadcast, and it did feel like they were throwing in the fourth quarter. Indianapolis was to probably extend the streak of Andrew Luck, you know, with the 300-yard games. What other reason did you really have? But I just said, talking, watching the game with Tony and JP, I just said, they have no fear. So what if you pick six here? So what?
Right.
They have zero fear that this team threatens them in any way at this point once
they
build up a couple of scores.
In the NFL, the other team can do whatever they want to do. If they want to throw for a streak.
Oh, it wasn't that I had an issue with it, okay. But it was like when you talk about if you're a coach and you're ahead, wouldn't it seem logical to, you know, avoid the risk and run the clock and all that? And that's fine. But I just felt in that circumstance, there was, with Roethlisberger throwing Antonio Brown, that's one play in a one possession game right at the end of the game that if something crazy happens, that's an unacceptable risk to me. Whereas here, I just felt like once they're up, like you said, 13-3, game over.
Right.
Game over.
It didn't seem like the Colts ever felt like, oh boy, this team's going to get a run going.
At all.
And, you know, frankly, it didn't look like they were.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Troy, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The guy before me kind of touched on my point, but I thought that was the most frustrating part of yesterday was every time we got a turnover, the three turnovers we got yesterday in the first half, I believe every time we got the ball after those turnovers, we ran the ball on first and second down. I'm of the theory, you got to, take some shots right after a turnover and, I don't know, so many deep shots we've had. I don't know. I'll see what y'all thought about that.
All right. Well, you know, one thing we talked about yesterday, JP and I, on the pregame was that Jed Fish has talked about, you can live with turnovers. You can live with interceptions.
Right.
It's tougher to live with them on first and second down.
And that's why the first interception, you know, you just put your pen down, you know, I mean, the press box, you just put your pen down and go, oh, not there.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's second, I think it was second seven, second.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure what Denard got on first down, but you were just like, not there. That's exactly what you talked about all week that you couldn't do.
Right.
You know, you couldn't have a pick there. You couldn't throw it out. I mean, and Blake said afterwards, bad throw. I mean,
and so when you do that, John, when you've been doing that, and you stress this, let's not do this, and the defense is playing like they're playing, and Blake goes in there and boom, gives it right back to them after a turnover, okay? Well, if you're Jed Fish, what do you think? Do you just, you're trying to win a football game.
Right.
Right? So you're not just saying, hey, let's go willy-nilly, we're going to chuck it deep every time until we can figure out how to hit one of these deep passes. You're playing within the context of a 60-minute football game. So you're thinking, all right,
you know
what?
At that point, you're still in it. So you're not going to go willy-nilly still in the game.
In the first half, it's never more than a three-point game. So you're sitting there going, okay, our game plan is to run the ball. let's continue to give our guy, let's not abandon it this quickly. It's the first half of this game. We're in the contest. Let's see if we can establish something. So I understand why they're doing it. I can also understand when it doesn't work, why it's frustrating for fans.
Well, I also get, I thought the exact same thing. You know, you get the turnover. You're at, I think, the Colts 46 after the first, or after the Clemens fumble. I may be remembering that wrong, but there was.
I think it was.
And, but I think that was the, I think that was the Jaguars' first play of the game after they got that turnover. So there's also the thing, you spend all week saying, we're going to run the ball. The instinct for a fan, for a lot of coordinators, is to go deep right after you get that turnover.
Right.
You know, I sort of get why they didn't do that there. You know, you run, you see if you can get something going with Denard. All of a sudden you're on second and three, then you go deep. You know, that's one of those where if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're an idiot. You would have liked to have seen them gone after the end zone when they got the ball at the 12-yard line. That, I think, frustrated a lot of people.
Yes.
On the next turnover.
Right. When you're in that range, throw something in the end zone, give yourself
a
chance.
And the screen, it was a tough catch for Toby. It looked like Blake sort of threw it to his side.
Right.
And probably came out a little hot. You know, so again, when those plays work, everybody's going, hey, great call, great screen.
You throw deep on first down, and it's incomplete. And then on second down, you get stopped for a 2-yard gain. Now you're setting your quarterback up in third and long. And, you know, I mean, like you said, that truly is, there's a lot of truth to that, that if it works, it was good. If it doesn't work, it was bad. Whether or not you can call the same play 100 times, sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not going to work.
Right.
That was kind of the issue yesterday, is that while the game may have still been in the balance, when they would drop back to pass on first down, they were getting 5 and 6 guys rushing, and they couldn't figure out a way to pick that up, even if they had guys open. And a couple times you saw situations where they did, but they were winding up in 2nd and 15, 2nd and 16, which led to 3rd and 20, and there's no way they're digging themselves out of that hole. I can remember a 3rd and 8 early in the game on their second series when Mercedes Lewis was coming wide open over the middle of the field because they brought 7. They had man coverage across the board, and Blake Bortles didn't even have enough time to get that ball out without getting hit. And if he had, that could have been a 30-yard play.
Right.
You don't know what it's going to end up being, but even when they had opportunities to make big plays in the passing game, they didn't have enough time to get to it. And I don't know how good or bad a game Jed Fisch called yesterday.
I really don't know
that it didn't feel like Blake Bortles was good enough at any point in that game for it to matter. How good or bad a game Jed Fisch was calling. Blake was having a terrible day, and I don't think that anything he was going to call was going to be able to overcome what was going on with this quarterback.
Which is really particularly disappointing to me coming off the bye week, all right, against a team that had struggled defensively. Indianapolis is no world beater on that side of the football. They're without their best player, Robert Mathis, for the season. So having that extra week, to have that level of performance with the extra week, I think. And I understand the extra week, you're not necessarily grinding. It was, you use it however you deem is best for your football team, whether that's to recharge the batteries. Mm-hmm. The coaching staff certainly has extra preparation time, whether the players do or not. And moving on. Let's go to Greg up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah,
I'm just as upset as the next guy when it comes to Jaguars, but I'm still a fan, a true fan. I'm not a part-time fair-weather fan like some of these guys calling. How can you try to be a fan like the guy in 2000? Either are you on. You're on the bandwagon or you're not on the bandwagon. If you got one leg dragging the ground, just get off the bandwagon. You know, they told you in the beginning it was going to be a process. Nobody's going to win every game, even though they do look terrible sometimes, but still. You know, you either support the team or you're not supporting the team.
Well, it's okay for fans to be frustrated. I mean, the caller who was frustrated earlier, he's allowed to be frustrated. On Sundays and Mondays, you're allowed to say, I'm giving up on. I mean, that's human nature. I was the world's biggest Redskins fan growing up, and I gave up on them after every loss for about 12 hours.
Pick any team.
That's what you do. That's
pick
what everybody
does. Any team in the National Football League. and have them start 1-9 3 years
right,
in a row.
Right.
And see how many. I'm sure there would be some guys like Greg that are like, hey, I don't care. I bleed my team's colors and I will, you know what? And every team's got that core, not excluding the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've got their core of those tight people as well. And thank goodness for you. All right. But at the same time, there are a lot of other people that don't consume football or sports in general that
right.
way.
This team's hardcore fans are as hardcore as it gets.
Are as hardcore as anybody.
There's not much more to say than that. We
no.
see it. I meet them. The whatever thousand it is that fill that bowl every Sunday, come win or lose, they're hardcore. They deserve better. Everybody gets it.
All right. We got to take a timeout halfway through. Jaguars today, 6-4-1-10-10. Plenty of time for your phone calls. The fan feedback spotlight today asking you what is who or what is most to blame for the Jags' offensive woes right now, coaching, players, front office, the alignment of the planets, whatever you want to go with. It's fair game. You can tweet us your responses to that at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. A Wild West Guns and Gold Money continues this date in football history.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's give it to you. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in 1940, former NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue popped out. He was born in 1940, so what would that make him?
Happy birthday, buddy.
74 years old, 74 years young. For Tags, happy
the
birthday,
players
Tags.
Miss you, Tags.
I felt like we had one very similar to this last week with Jim Brown. Maybe he just did this a lot. November 24th, 1957, at the time, Cleveland Brown rookie Jim Brown ran for what was an NFL record, 237 yards and 4 touchdowns. Browns beat the L.A. Rams 45-60. Some things change. Some things stay the same. I mean, it could be the L.A. Rams again very soon. One of the best games of the day yesterday, Cleveland. With the comeback victory over Atlanta in the final seconds. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Whether you want the stop snoring mouth guard for you or a loved one, it's always for your loved one. Trust me. Cosmetic work, just in the market for a family dentist. Call Dr. McCall at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
All right, tonight we have the unexpected late-season Monday Night Football doubleheader with the Buffalo Bills and New York Jets playing in Detroit because of the punishing snow up there in the Buffalo area. Kickoff set for 7 p.m. Tickets for the game were given away for free, and what followed is exactly what you would expect to follow something like that. Scalpers got a hold of the tickets for the game. They're selling those free tickets on the street, some for well over $100 a piece. The online ticket services refuse to resell the tickets, such as Ticketmaster and so on, which is probably wise if they want to stay associated with the National Football League. Baltimore will be in New Orleans tonight as well for the regularly scheduled Monday Night Football game at 8:30. The Jacksonville Jaguars will be hosting Tom Coughlin and the Giants next Sunday here at Everbank Field. Last night, the Cowboys came from behind against the G-Men, scoring the go-ahead touchdown with just 61 seconds remaining in the game on the second hookup between Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. The star of the first half, if not the game, though, was Giants rookie wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., whose one-handed body contortion catch ranks where on the list of the best catches you've ever seen, regardless of the stage?
It was the best catch, physically, the best catch I've ever seen, I think, physically. Now, it's not the most important catch. You know, Santonio Holmes did a tremendous job tapping his toes right. in the end zone against Arizona. It was a very difficult catch, but I think a lot of guys could make that catch given the exact same opportunity. How many guys could even physically do what he did to get his body in position, to get his hand on the ball, never mind catch it clean, bring it in, get the feet in bounds while being pass interfered with, and still fall your way into the end zone over the last couple of yards?
You know what it reminded you of?
Back in your intramural days.
Yeah, of course me, but beyond that, it sort of reminded you of, like, if you were watching, like, a bad football movie and there was a catch at the end to win the game, you'd be like, yeah, like that could happen.
Come on, you know, right? I mean, seriously, camera angles.
Like, yeah.
That's all that was.
The whole thing. Exactly.
That was obscene. And I didn't watch it live because I must have been Walking Dead or Talking Dead, one of those going on.
Right.
You know, I just flip over on the commercials on Sunday nights now. And, but everyone, you know, Twitter's blowing up and everything.
Cool.
So,
yeah.
I mean, immediately I went to Deadspin and just, they had the replay up and you're like, wow. I mean, it's usually
the announcer who said it. It was impossible. If you had seen that in some sort of computer simulation, like on a video game, my son always talks about, that's a video game catch. You know,
right. That's not realistic. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's video game catch. That's what it was. It looked like a video game. Especially the way it hit his hands and he controlled it with two fingers. It was impossible.
Right. The odds of someone pinning the ball to their helmet like David Tyree are very small. But physically, there's nothing special about what he did. I mean, he was there and he pinned the ball to his helmet. Any receiver could theoretically do that. I mean, Calvin Johnson, how many guys could go get that ball? And when if you factored in, like, his height compared to everybody else and you threw it in proportion, how above his head that ball was.
It was, yeah.
Man, arching back, one hand, snatch, that was
no, it's crazy.
Phenomenal.
And you've seen stuff, not that exact thing, obviously, like we're talking about, but you saw guys as physically talented as Randy Moss go up over two or three defenders and snatch a ball out of the air with one hand, and you're like, how can anyone do that kind of thing? And you've seen those plays. I remember a play against Dallas. I can't even remember how long ago it was now, where Randy Moss caught a ball where the ball is a good 4 yards out of bounds, and somehow he extended himself and still had his knee scrape the ground, just one knee scrape the ground as he was going out, and it's like, how do you do that?
Right.
If you're somebody, and it's that kind of catch every now and then you see one, it's just, it's like that White Panther we were talking about last week with Joey Galloway. You see one in nature, you're like, those don't exist, but there they are.
Every once in a while.
People just say, why did he do that?
Why?
Why does he have to
How
keep
could
doing
they let
that?
Him play? Right. How could they continue to let him play?
So it's a different game.
It was the most impressive aspect of the game. Second, and not that far behind, was to watch Tony Romo stand there. Look right. Let me come back to the middle. No, back to the right for a second. Back over to the left. Nobody's here. I'm going to go. There's Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
Boom.
I joked around with you a moment ago with primetime coming up next. I was like, he had enough time to do a primetime pop-off. Like, he had enough time in the pocket.
Hey, guys, this is Tony Romo. I'm sitting here in the pocket right now, and I really think the Jags offense needs to get in gear. All right, hold on a second. I got to throw this one to Dez. There you
go. Right. It was unreal, which is why when people want to talk about what's going on in Jacksonville, what the real key is for them to get this offense going, it's to occasionally have a play where you do have your quarterback have time to make a play. And it just, it doesn't exist right now in Jacksonville like it does across, it seems like, the entire football landscape. You're even watching that game Thursday night. Look, you saw Carr from time to time. He would have time to make a play, and it's just not here right now.
Well, that's what we said earlier, John. Why? How difficult is it going to be to evaluate Blake Bortles fairly in this circumstance? I'm not, believe me, when I bring these things up, I'm not writing off Blake Bortles.
No, I know.
You can't ignore his poor play of late, or his seemingly regressing play of late. But at the same time, I'm not making excuses. These are factors. These are realities of what's going on around him. But to see Tony Romo there yesterday, I've got to believe, not watching the game, that Zach Mettenberger is getting some high level of protection. I know they have a lot of money sunk into the offensive line of Tennessee, but that is as heavy-footed a quarterback as you'll probably find in the National Football League as a rookie, and he's coming in and he's slinging it all over the lot, and I gotta believe it's because the protection is there for him. I'd love to see Blake have a game like that where he'd get a clean pocket and get 5 seconds to get the ball off.
And it's become a deal where it's an important decision that they have to make, is what's the offensive line going to look like going forward? Do you think these guys can develop? What's going to happen with that spot? Because it's got, you know, there's no way that he can develop with the kind of time he had yesterday.
Right.
No matter what you think he is or isn't, there's no way that he can develop with that.
And the problem, I hear T-Wake bring this up a lot, is that you have positions that ostensibly you think, well, we fixed that. We're good there. We're going to add some other places. These are not ones we need to go back and address. And less than 2 years into the process, I think you're looking at this situation and you're looking at that offensive line, and I'm not breaking them down on film. I can't tell you how each individual is grading out, but as a whole, when you can't run it and you can't protect, I'm not going to give anybody a super high grade right now.
It's difficult to know individually what they're thinking of each guy, but as a whole, something isn't working when it was what it was yesterday.
Correct.
And I'm not a genius, obviously, but
yes, you are.
Well,
you may not be
in some ways
gifted, pal.
But I mean, that can't continue.
Grammar, syntax, Osier's your guy. All right, he's a senior writer after all. 641-1010. Claude, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm a first time caller. I listen
Welcome.
To your program often, but what I want to do is, you know, I was born and raised here. I moved back here about 5 years ago, but even when I was living in other cities, I followed the Jaguars. But I think I'd like to make a comment that will perhaps provide or summarize what we are dealing with here in terms of the team. You know, Jacksonville, the Jaguars is a 20-year-old franchise that actually had great success early on, you know, in its inception. And that's rare in the NFL. Like you said earlier to a caller, there are teams in the NFL who've been down for a half century, you know, i.e. Detroit Lions, Cleveland Browns, the other teams. And we have a team full of first and second year players, maybe some third year players. And they're all young, trying to learn how to do something that just takes a little time, takes a little longer than perhaps other players. But as a team, it's about getting that chemistry there. I mean, you have to have talent, you have to have skill set in order to perform the tasks that are required, you know, on the field and for what the coaches are looking for. But winning is a learned behavior, and gaining that behavior is a process. You know, that the offensive woes that we're looking at, and you know, people, you know, they want to see things instantaneously, but that's the kind of world, you know, that we live in.
Right.
But,
let me jump in here, and I appreciate the call here, Claude. Look, and I get that, but the reality isn't. Sports today, and the National Football League in particular, but all sports, you don't have this luxury of this open-ended time period where, you know, you say it's a learned behavior. Well, what did the Atlanta Falcons learn when they went from four wins to double digits? They learned that they had acquired Matt Ryan, okay? The same thing with Baltimore. They learned that they had acquired Joe Flacco. And, oh, that seemed to coincide with about an eight-game jump in the standings, okay? Did they learn how to win eight more games, or did they acquire better players? I mean, you know, I understand what you're talking about, but that Indianapolis team that won, what did they win? 1-15 they go with
3-13.
Before they got Luck, they were 3-14.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2-14.
Two and fourteen. Did they learn how to win, or did they get Andrew Luck the next year? Right, it's the same basic collection of talent. Or did they forget how to win because they had been successful when they had the right guy quarterback? I'm not. This is not to point out Blake Bortles. This is just talking about an infusion of the right talent is what lifts you to winning, in my opinion, quicker than anything else.
Yeah. And the X factor again, and you know, I'm tired of talking about youth. What you don't know, because very few teams have gone this young, you know, obviously so much youth on offense has been a killer for this season. What will it mean for next season is what we don't know yet.
We don't.
And I don't know how to answer with five games left. I wish I could sit here and say X, Y, and Z aren't working, get them out of here, but that's the dilemma you face when you go this young with this many guys, is you've got to give them time to develop, because your theory is it will take time. Now, that's hard for the long haul. I mean, it's hard for the short term. When do you know in the long term? I don't know that.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, you look last year, right? E.J. Manuel, first quarterback taken. He's done, basically. Mm-hmm. He's not halfway through his second season. He was done as the future of the franchise in Buffalo. Geno Smith in New York, same thing. Again, not the same investment that the Jags have in Blake Bortles, but season and a half, done.
Right.
That's it. The clock, this it's going to take time. It's going to da-da-da. You don't have that luxury as much in the NFL. I think in this situation, I think Shad Khan is giving this front office slash coaching staff the luxury of more time.
Because there was an idea at the beginning that this was a very, I don't want to say epic, but significant build compared
right.
to other builds.
A stripped down
so there,
to
there's
nothing.
More time.
Yes.
But it's not an indefinite period of time.
Correct. And just for the record, because it bears repeating because it comes up, the general manager and the head coach are in zero danger, in my opinion,
right.
of losing their job, okay? And Blake Bortles is in zero danger of losing his spot in their eyes, right? They're the decision makers. Caldwell
yeah.
and Bradley are safe, and Caldwell and Bradley are invested and believe in Blake Bortles. So the
yes.
idea that Gus Bradley needs to go, Dave Caldwell needs to go, we need to draft a quarterback in the first round, none of those things are going to be happening this offseason.
No, people can talk about it all they want.
They can talk about it, but I think if you want to just deal with, you can bang your head against the wall and be upset, but come to grips with that reality, because I feel it's 100% certainty as I sit here today that that is a reality, even if they were to lose the last five games of the season.
You are correct, sir.
There you go. All right, 641-1010, we agree on, I agree with the genius. That makes me feel good about myself today. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Who knew? I didn't, certainly, that Diddy redid Disco Inferno. Did you know that? You have the 12-inch dance mix single. Do they still do 12-inch vinyl?
If they do, I got it.
Do you? I bet you do. All right, 641-1010, we'll get back to your calls momentarily. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories is Wild West Guns and Gold. From revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America, guaranteed. And you can also trade your gold for guns.
You're darn right.
Right
and
there.
Thank goodness we live in a country where you can.
God bless America, brother. All right. Guns4jax.com. Guns, the number 4, JAX.com. Or visit Wild West Guns and Gold in person. Tell them we said hello. They're right there on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. 693-0777, the number. Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. Glad you're with us. We've got Jim up next. 641-1010 is the phone number if you want to vent, sound off. I think a lot of venting today, and it's clearly understandable. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's John's fault. I've just come to the conclusion that we thought we brought John back to bring some Peyton Manning karma, and instead he brought us Curtis Painter. Thank you very much, John.
Thanks
really
a lot, John. Appreciate
hey,
that.
You're so behind the curve in blaming me that, you know.
Get in line.
Yeah. Get in line, baby. I love Mondays.
All right. I guess that was it. It's your fault, John Painter. It's the Painter era has overtaken us. Eric, you're up next. 641-1010, the number. Eric, how are you?
Hey, John, Mike. A long-time fan, long, few-time caller. I got kind of two comments. Kind of hit on the first one about Blake Bortles and not being put in a position, putting too many rookies playing on the offensive side. I kind of put out on Caldwell's position because he drafted Bortles in the first round, and he must have known Henning wasn't going to last out the whole season. But knowing that we have six or seven rookies starting on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, come on now. You had to figure out there's going to be some major problems with that, not put Bortles in a good learning curve if you just thought that was going to happen. And secondly, I'd like to see Gus show a little bit more emotion about the team, how they're playing, instead of hearing the same old thing, just get better every day, get better every game. And if it's not happening, then set some players down and try to find some other new players to come in if you can. I mean, I'm trying to lose some of the hardcore, not the hardcore fans, but the everyday fans, like my wife and a couple of my friends, because they hear the same things over and over again in the organization, but don't see anything changing.
All right, well, I will say this as far as that goes. A couple of points. One, I think Gus, prior to this game, you know, indicated, without pounding his fist on the podium, saying, you know, the race to maturity's got to speed up. I think he's acknowledging we need more wins. I don't think anybody's happy with where they are. As far as things not changing, Winston Guy was a starter at the beginning of the year. It didn't take long for him to be out the door. Dakota Watson was brought in to be a starter. Didn't take long for him to go out the door. I mean, when guys have underperformed their expectations,
yeah.
they either didn't make the roster or got shipped out. The issue is...
There's been more of that this year than is the norm. You just can't change your personnel midstream in the NFL because you're, by definition, you're changing it for lesser players.
I'll tell you one thing.
If you do it wholesale, I'm saying.
Usually you're doing it for lesser players. I watched a game yesterday, John, and I can't help but be frustrated to watch Josh Cribbs go bananas, okay? Been on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And is he a part of a 10-year build? No, he's not. He's not a part of a 3-year build, but let's win some football games right now, right? That's what they've stated the goal. It's not just about, we're not cashing in these last 5 games now, 6 to 5 games, just to prepare for the future. I mean, what has A. Sanders done for you in that position? Yes, he's a young guy.
Yeah.
Has he gotten the job done? How long do you give him that opportunity to show you something different than what he's shown you so far? And it's just frustrating to me to see Indy pick this guy up and look like the Josh Cribbs that we're always used to seeing, which is a dynamic, explosive return man on both punt and kickoffs.
Your frustration is understandable.
There you have it.
And looking at the offense and all the rookies that the caller there was pointing out, I always try to keep in mind, too, Bowanko, Hearns, and Bortles specifically, they didn't expect when they drafted those guys or brought them in to have to rely on them as much as they are right now at this point in their rookie seasons. I don't think they expected to have to do that with those three guys. Now, because of what happened at the center position, Bowanko became the obvious answer mm-hmm. for him, but that is a rookie playing center that I think they expected to have on the practice squad at this point this year, and
very
instead
close
he's
to
their
it.
Starting
yes.
center. I think Hearns is an undrafted free agent. There is no way when they brought him in, there was an expectation that 2 weeks into the season, he's going to be our starter at wide receiver.
All right, but Tony, but
none.
To that point, right, what does that say about the evaluation of Mike Brewster and Jock McClendon as your
you.
Two primary guys?
But that's why they went after Mack. And there were no other answers to go after available to them. They went after the answer that they had available to them. They couldn't get it.
Right, but when you're saying nobody expected, like, Bowanko to come in, certainly that's an indictment of what you were rolling out there to
no
begin
doubt.
With Hearns, okay, as an undrafted rookie. Well, what about the drafted rookies? And I understand injuries
play a role. But the point is more about when you're talking about having 6 or 7 rookies on the offensive side of the ball, they didn't want that. They got put in a position where those were the best answers for them to have on the field at the time. Now, that's because of the decisions they made with the roster before that. But those were the best players at those positions for this team. And that's why you have 6 or 7 of them out there. I don't think they ever wanted to be put in that
position.
Oh,
I don't think they did either. I mean, I think they were serious about it. I think we're seeing why they didn't want to play Blake mm-hmm. this early. They felt he was too raw. He wasn't ready. And then he came in the first couple of games and he slung it around. And everyone was like, y'all are crazy. Let me ask you a serious question here. Okay. The caller brought up, I don't know if this is the last one or the one before, brought up they couldn't have possibly thought Henny was good enough to hold down the fort in the meantime. Right. I think they did.
Yep.
Right. And how much of the decision to go to Henny was influenced by public pressure?
Perception. To go to Bortles, you mean?
I think to go to Bortles from Henny. Because, John, they were going into that Indy game knowing that if they didn't get it going in the next half of football, they were going to make a switch. And they didn't, and it was a terrible
half. I think
they
felt like they needed that mobility. They needed what he was bringing to them at the time. They needed his ability to escape the pocket.
Because you're coming
really
off
struggling.
The game against Washington where they got sacked, what, he got sacked
right.
10 times in the game.
And there was just a feeling that they needed somehow, whatever it was, to get some first downs to keep the defense off the field a little bit. Remember, I mean, this was when it was 3 and out after 3 and out after 3 and out. After the first half of Philly, it seemed like every drive was a 3 and out for however long they played.
Right, I hear you.
So there was that feeling of...
But basically, after Philly, you had a game and a half. That's all you had before you made the switch.
Yeah.
So for the next game
and a half...
Well,
second half against Philly was rough now,
okay,
offensively.
True.
So,
right, so for two games.
But yeah,
eight
I mean,
quarters.
I don't think it was as much public perception... Or public outcry, or the pitchforks at the gate.
There were a lot of pitchforks.
Yes, there were, but I'm not saying that wasn't real. I'm saying the decision, though, was more looking at that defense always back on the field within a minute and a half. They felt like they had to do something to give the offense some sort of life, and
they
did
for a short
sure.
spell. It certainly, but I mean, I couldn't be help but compare yesterday to how that game was so reminiscent of the first few games of the season. I mean, you know,
yep.
you're sitting there looking at it, and yeah, okay, they had the one drive where they went from their own 5 down to eventually stopped at the 3. They got to the 1-yard line and drive ended up at the 3. didn't get any points out of it. And, you know, the one thing you're hanging your hat on is, you know, a long drive that resulted in 0 points on the scoreboard. You know, it's just a bad situation. Let's go to Robert up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Hey, guys. How y'all today?
Good, thanks.
I don't know much about football. I definitely don't know too much about coaching. But it just seems to me that the coach is more concerned about increasing the stats as opposed to the points. And I think that they should both be more focused on getting points as opposed to improving the stats. Now, I may be wrong about that.
What gives you that impression?
No, I'm saying they say we're always improving. Every week we're doing more. He's catching more balls. We're improving this, that, and the other. But he's not saying a thing about improving the point score. I think he's more focused on just increasing their...
I think ultimately the goal is to increase the, you know, score more points than the opponent, clearly, is the goal. And I think what Gus Bradley, Johnny, correct me if you feel I'm mischaracterizing this, his philosophy is you don't concentrate on the end result, you concentrate on the steps that get you there. And that is improving your play. Improved play will ultimately lead to improved results on the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's the overriding philosophy. Although I will say, you know, again, I'm not in meetings. I don't know. Obviously, they want to score points. And there has been more of an emphasis when they speak about these things. When Jed Fish talks, when Blake Bortles talks, when Gus Bradley talks, there has been more talk in the last couple of weeks of, look, when we have these opportunities, we have to figure out a way to score points. We, you know, so, I mean, I get if you're listening why you would have the impression that caller had. But they're more concerned with points than they are stats. They're more concerned with points than
they are. All they want to do is win.
Right. I mean, they have this Zen-like approach to getting better. That's what they emphasize when they talk. That's what they emphasize. That's what they want to do. But the desire is there to win. It's not a question of a focus on the wrong thing, and that's why you're not scoring or winning. They're just not doing it.
Right. They're folks that they believe that you don't say, let's go out there and win the game. They say, let's go out there, let's block properly.
Right.
Let's throw it properly. And those things will lead to you winning the game.
But that's not an indication that they're not thinking about winning.
Right. Those things aren't more important.
Right.
Those things are just, they feel the emphasis needs to be on that because those are the steps that need to be taken to get to the winning.
Right. But there is a complete understanding that you have to score points and score more points than the opponent to win the National Football League. There's not a loss of focus.
They do grasp that concept.
They do grasp, right. And I'm not trying to make light of that because I do get that question, but they get that.
All right, let's go to Jerry. Thank you for the call, Robert. Jerry, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Basically, I see regression right now on the offensive side of the ball. What I saw from yesterday's game is we are missing Paul Posluszny in the run game a little bit, stopping some of the runs. That being said, on the offensive side of the ball, it seems like Blake was having more success in the first few games than he is now. It seems like he's regressing a little bit. And if I'm not mistaken, it's the same offensive line that he had. He was having some success. I just think defense is Indianapolis. They actually said we're going to stop the run and we're going to make him beat us with a pass. And they were bringing everything but the kitchen sink yesterday. And we couldn't handle that. The pressure they just got the Bortles way too quick. He wasn't able to get the ball out. I think it's on Jed Fish to be able to come up with a game plan that gets the ball out of Blake's hands quicker to the receivers. And Mercedes Lewis, I know it's his first game back, but, you know, I'm kind of tired of hearing he's a great blocking tight end, and I need to see him for what they're paying him. He needs to be more active in the game, and they need to get the ball in his hands more.
All right. Thank you, Ed. A couple of things. One, I didn't watch a film, didn't break down play by play. Can't imagine I would give him a good grade when they don't run the ball effectively, and he's a non-factor. He hurt you in the passing game with -5 yards.
Right.
As far as that goes. Here's the conundrum. Let's call more plays, get the balls out of his hands.
They did that.
Quickly, okay?
Right.
Oh, wait, they're not taking any shots downfield. You can't have them both.
Right.
You cannot stretch the field and get the ball out of the quarterback's hand quickly. That's why they're not able to protect him because
that's called a conundrum.
It is a conundrum, right? It's a situation that they're stuck in right now. They threw a bunch of those little screens to the point where I was just like, come on, another running back little screenplay out of the backfield.
Well, and who knows what would have happened. The screen they had early to Toby Gerhardt that looked like it was set up really, really well. And Blake just threw a ball that was too hot. And again, who knows if maybe completing that pass doesn't help Blake settle into the game, help everything get set up early on.
But Tony, you hear the margin for error you're talking about.
Oh, I know.
Right. Look, I mean, like, we can't have the quarterback throws one ball a little too high.
And it may have done nothing.
Right.
Honestly, it may have had no effect. It may have gained 15 yards on that play, and he still would have been horrible for the rest of that game. You don't know. I think that Jed Fish, though, on the sideline, he's like, I did it. He's like, they blitzed. I called a screen to the side they blitzed from. We had three offensive linemen downfield in front of our guy. All he has to do is get the ball in his hands, and we can get a big play.
Right.
What do I have to do? I mean, there has to at least be that thought, and quickly, just on a side note, I thought the linebackers actually played really, really well.
I thought Telvin was outstanding.
Telvin was great. I thought Geno flashed three or four times in that game where he was making plays. JT Thomas did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I thought the linebackers, and for the most part, the defense, outside of that one play, played really, really well in yesterday's game.
But again, in the National Football League these days, the defenses, most defenses are going to give up one play. That defense played fine for the most part.
I'm not knocking the
defense. Wasn't a great third quarter. I mean, I'm sure there's plays in the third quarter they'd like to have back. You weren't perfect. But as somebody says, that was a winning effort by the defense.
Absolutely. I mean, you played that well for half of football. If you're up 14-3 instead of down 6-3.
So many things changed.
Which is what St. Louis did to Peyton Manning just the week before.
Right.
You want to know how you beat guys like Andrew Luck? When they're playing the way they are and you're punching them in the mouth that
score.
Much, you score. You be up in that game 10-3. Yep. You be up in that game 14-3.
Because
and make them
so
feel like they're climbing
change.
That hill. Right. Instead, it was 3-3. They weren't doing anything.
All right. Timeout right here on Jaguars Today. Coming back with the fan feedback spotlight. Where do you point the finger of blame? As far as the offensive woes go, coaching, players, front office, you name it. Most people point it directly at the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Johnny O, ladies and gentlemen, we'll hear some of your responses, and oh, there are plenty of them. Twitter is crushing me under the weight of the virtual replies this morning. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the stretch here, Jaguars Today, your Tom Bush Family Dealership fan feedback spotlight asking you, where do you point the finger of blame for the offensive woes? Coaching, players, front office, bad karma, what did you have for dinner last week, whatever. John Osier, me, nobody points a finger at Tony and Lauren over my dead body. I don't care. Point the finger at whoever you are.
I don't care. I can take it.
What do you got, Tony? We asked folks to tweet us today and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and they did so.
Yeah, it may be the most response I've seen to one of these questions in at least a long time.
Yeah, we got a lot today.
But I'll go through what we can. Paolo said, Blake has completely lost his confidence. Handcuffing him does not help either. From Irish Jaguar, who gave us a call yesterday on the Scoreboard Show.
He did.
He said, malarkey. And he said it in an Irish accent, and it gave me a
He was talking about
kick.
Mike, but it was great nonetheless.
I don't know if it's Blake playing scared or Jed play calling scared. It sucks. From Eric, Bortles, the O depends on how he plays. He's given the coaches nothing to be confident in. From Jason, poor offensive game plan and inability / reluctance to make adjustments. From Brad, we got blame the quarterback play has been awful, terrible mechanics throwing off back foot, throwing ducks again. From Duval Doom, the culprit is play calling. I would rather see them throw pick after pick after pick. We are 1-10. From Black Dog Express, crosshairs are on Jed Fish. His tentative play calling is contributing to B2's fading confidence. # grow a blank. From Josh, I blame the pigeon. He's been MIA for weeks. From Joey,
cat ate him.
Bad players running bad plays in a bad scheme. Everyone top to bottom is to blame. # maybe next year. # maybe 2016.
Now, here's a few that I got before I even posted the question. This is from at Drum Meter. Bortles regressing. Jaguars offense is a scam. It's a scam, Tony. It's like a three-card Monty that they're running out there for you. What else? This one from at Borquato 13, Jags fanatic, he calls himself, I am done with this team. There's no light at the end of the tunnel, and Blake is garbage. # renew season ticks for what? What else did we get? are we doing to Blake what we did to Gabbert? I don't get that sense. I mean, I don't see Blake like shrinking in the pocket. No. I don't think, but the word scared, I don't think scared is part of it. Is it when you don't have success, is it, I mean, fear, let's put the cards on the table. I think a lot of us thought that Blaine Gabbert was afraid to get hit. Okay.
Yeah.
And you could talk, well, no, you should never say that about a pro player. Well, I haven't seen many players shrink from contact like I did Blaine Gabbert in the pocket. I'm sorry. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback consistently do that. That's that guy. Can you have a rational fear of we have done this over and over and it has resulted in very little success? I fear it will not work. That's not being afraid in the sense that I think a lot of people are talking.
That's trying to figure out what's going on.
Right. That's why am I keep banging my head against the wall? These people that say, you know, I don't care how many interceptions he throws.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Do.
Yes, you do. All right. Let's just throw it deep every play because what the heck? We're 1-10.
They don't have time.
All this idea about learning how to win, learning how to develop a game plan, game management, play to the situation and the score and all these different things. How are you going to learn that if you just, let's just drop back, let's run this guy deep this route, this guy deep on the next one, this guy deep on the next one?
It doesn't make any sense. And look, we'll have Loggeman in tomorrow. We'll be over at the studio for the J-Fund.
Yes, we will.
Radiothon
tomorrow
as well. But we'll talk about the tape and we'll talk about going back over this game. And even with the offensive line, which has been improving, at least over the course of the season, it's been getting better. The run blocking has obviously been pretty good for the last month and a half. It didn't show up a whole lot yesterday, and Indianapolis took advantage of it. But throughout that process, what we've had the conversation with Jeff, I don't know how many times now, John, they are really struggling blocking 5 and 7. So any kind of drop back for Blake Bortles, they have struggled with since he came into the game with this Jaguar team, and it's still there. They have not gotten better in that aspect, and opposing defenses are taking full advantage of it. They're saying, you can't block it when we're bringing 4. God help you when we bring 6.
Right.
You're not going to get us blocked up.
And that is an issue because your left tackle is the first draft pick just a year and a half ago. You spent the most money in free agency on the left guard. And, you know, those two rookies, from everything that I gather from listening to Boselli and Loggeman, those guys watching the tape, they're playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. Those guys may be the best pair on the offensive line.
It felt like watching the game yesterday that the Colts were targeting making Bowanko and Linder make decisions on blitzes, and I think they took advantage of it a lot because there was a lot being thrown at them at times in that game, and sometimes they made the right decision, sometimes they didn't.
And that I can live with, Tony,
yep,
sure. with a young player, because physically – I think they have fit the bill, right?
Me
I don't
too.
See them getting constantly overpowered, like we've seen at times with different positions or at times in the past. I don't get that at all from Linder and a very little from Bowanko to my eye watching those guys. John, I asked you, off the air a little while ago, wherever the Jags draft, and I'm not making this a draft show, but just in other than quarterback, and clearly there are certain positions you don't draft in the top five of the draft, but other than quarterback, is there anything off the table to you? If they felt like they had a difference maker available to them.
I would say no, because I think what this team needs right now more than anything is that difference maker. You need that guy who can make the play above the X's and O's. And it's tough for an offensive lineman to do that, but you know what I'm talking about. That guy who, when he walks into the room, everybody on the field, or even when he practices, everybody goes, okay, I'm going to stop for a second and watch that guy. I'm not sure they have that anywhere.
My point being, Dave Caldwell has said to us on this show, to many others, many times since the draft, that he looked forward to this year's draft class and said part of the decision-making process to select Blake was they projected Blake with another year of college experience under his belt being the top guy on their draft board coming into this year. So I doubt he's changed his mind that quickly. I think there's staunch support.
I would be stunned if he's changed
Stunned. So this concept, I know people are out there say, hey, you only get a crack at it once. Let's get Jameis. Let's get Mariota. Let's get whoever. Just come to grips with the fact that's not going to happen.
I understand the sentiment. I don't see that happening.
And part of the main reason is because of Dave Caldwell's already expressed opinion that Blake would be better than any of these other guys anyway.
Well, already expressed, and I don't know that there's anything that would make him think that that's not so the case.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. Right. I don't think he would have changed his mind about a guy after 8 games.
Right.
You know, because he understands the circumstances. So, but beyond that, If you thought you were going to get a Tyron Smith, and watch that guy play last night. It was phenomenal. I don't think left tackles. My point being, I don't think there are any sacred cows.
I'd be surprised if they went that position, but I wouldn't say that they're sitting there right now going, it's off the table.
That's my point. Right. That's a shame, honestly. I would hope that after a couple of draft classes, there would be a few of those off the table type positions. Now, some of them, as we said, are off the table because you're not going to draft a strong safety at the, you know, with the top five. I just picked that out at random. You know what I'm talking about, you know, but of the premier positions, clearly, I think you felt like you had a,
there's no position on this team where you couldn't use a superstar.
Right, where you couldn't use an upgrade.
Right.
Basically. And look, you might be able to say that about a lot of teams at a lot of positions.
I agree.
But there are the very good teams, the playoff teams, you feel like, well, you know what, maybe you could upgrade. So I mean, you could upgrade Andrew Luck maybe to Aaron Rodgers. Good luck finding, you know, I mean, the margin you're talking about, you look at certain guys on certain teams, you say, locked and loaded. We know, not we hope, but we know that we've got something for the long term with that guy.
And again, when you make the decision to truly blow it up, then you have a lot of question marks for a longer time than you'd like.
Well, that's where things stand right now. A lot of frustration, understandable frustration. I told you we're 5 weeks away from, okay, with the first pick or whatever pick it is in the NFL draft that will dominate 5 months of talk. I'm trying to hold it off as long as possible.
Right.
Just so you know, officially, as we discussed last week, Tony and suspected Jags win the tiebreaker, I guess you could look at it, lose the tie, however you want to look at
whatever
it.
Whatever it is.
They, right now, if the draft were held today, you'd have your choice of every player who is draft eligible. The Jags have the number one pick in the
Hooray!
Draft.
So you said we're 5 weeks away from talking draft, right?
Yes.
You know what we're 7 days from?
7 days away from talking about the upset of the New York Giants.
A Wild West Golden Guns Monday.
That's Guns of Gold. Same idea. That's a good
point.
That's
what we're 7 days away
That's
from.
That's a fantastic
Dave.
Point you made, by the way.
No matter what happens, we got that.
It is a week-to-week league, and we sit there and we say, how can the Jags beat Cleveland, Cincinnati do what they did to the Jags, and then Cleveland throttle Cincinnati? So it does happen, but you're going to have one of those head scratcher 1 in 100 performances for the Jags to have a chance to beat this New York Giants team coming in.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that because I think the Giants got really up for a nationally televised game last week. And as well as the defense played, you don't need a miracle performance from the offense. You need a couple scores, which I guess right now some people would say, well, that would be a miracle.
What did the Giants do very well defensively, traditionally, the last 8 years or so?
Traditionally, it's get after the quarterback. Not so much this year.
How do you think they'll fare in that capacity on Sunday?
Oh, I think they'll fare like everyone else does.
You know what you are right now? You know what you are right now? You're a hater.
I'm a realist.
I'm a realist.
I'm sorry. I am a realist, and I will remain such on this broadcast and everywhere else.
You said we're a week away from another Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We're 8 hours away from Timeout Tonight with Paul Spicer and myself.
Here we go. Self-promotion.
I am not close to done about with talking about this Jacksonville Jaguar game and performance, so we'll obviously get into that tonight. And there was some college football news over the weekend, I guess. Florida State and Jameis
Winston. Don't make me come shove you, Tony.
We'll dig into that as well, take a look at an early peek at who should be in the four when it is released tomorrow night. That's
incidental
all coming up tonight.
Incidental contact. That's the two words you need to be aware of. Incidental contact.
Tonight from 8 to 10 with Timeout. Me and Paul Spicer will be back.
It has gotten to the point now where, as long as it's not a crime that's being committed, I hope Jameis continues to get away with everything.